sure you are in fellowship, and let's continue on here now, having dealt with verses 9 and 10, is this blessing, the blessing of the imputation of righteousness and the great happiness that comes from the salvation adjustment. Is it available to the circumcised or to the uncircumcised also? And the statement that we say, that anybody who is familiar with Genesis would say, is faith was credited to Abraham as righteousness. Well, how, in what state then was it credited? While he was circumcised or uncircumcised? Not while circumcised, but while uncircumcised. And now verse 11, and he received the sign of circumcision, a seal of the righteousness of the faith which he had while uncircumcised. And is chi here, a sign is semion, S-E-M-E-I-O-N. This means a mark or sign or a token. It's an accusative neuter singular, but it's in emphatic position here at the beginning of the sentence. A sign he received. And then you have this genitive of apposition, peritome, which is circumcision. He received is the aorist indicative of the verb to take or receive, lambano, L-A-M-B-A-N-O. And then you have here a genitive of apposition. The sign is circumcision. That these are essentially the same thing. He received the sign of circumcision. A seal. This word, sphragis, S-P-H-R-A-G-I-S. Sphragis means a seal. Here used for that which confirms or authenticates something. It elaborates here, because it's the same, you got an accusative here. Again, it continues the thought of the sign, but the sign and the seal have different characters. They're the same thing, but a sign is one thing and a seal is another. But they both relate to this matter of circumcision. So he received a seal of the righteousness. Dikaiosune, D-I-K-A-I-O-S-U-N-E. A seal of the righteousness here, an objective genitive. In other words, the righteousness is what he had received. And then, of course, he receives this. Then you have another genitive that follows this. A genitive of means. A seal of the righteousness of faith, or that he got by means of faith. His righteousness did not come from him to him through the principle of works, but rather through the principle of faith, as Paul has elaborately documented here. For us. So a seal of the righteousness that he already possessed, essentially, by means of his faith, which he had, in the state of, preposition in, state or sphere of uncircumcision, akrobistia, again. So that he might be the father of all who believe without being circumcised. And what you have here is the directional preposition eis plus the aorist active infinitive. I'm sorry, present active infinitive to be. You got into, and then you have the articular infinitive of to eimi, T O E I M I. In the Greek, literally into the to be, and this is a construction that expresses purpose for the purpose. So that he might be the father of all who believe without being circumcised. So that he might be, again, this is God's purpose. Some say, some want to treat this as result. I understand that it is the effective result. But when you're dealing with the matter of purpose and result, you have to ask yourself, well, first, because this is being done by God, does God have a purpose in this? And he does. And his purpose was for Abraham to be the father of all who believe. And again, the universal father. This is God's purpose in this. So that he might be, him to be, literally, the he here, accusative masculine singular of autos, that's the accusative of general reference, which just means that that accusative functions as the subject of the previous infinitive. So that he might be the father, pater, of all, the genitive of relationship, the father of all people, the ones believing, definite article plus the participle, present active participle here, functioning as a substantive, the ones believing, P-I-S-T-E-U-O, whoever believes, all, everyone who believes, all who believe, while, or without being circumcised. All who, all the ones believing, and then you have this preposition dia here, which is used to denote, in this case, a temporal relationship. During the time of, through, we might say, through the time they were uncircumcised, or while they were uncircumcised. Then you have another here, accusative construction, ice with the accusative, the articular, present active and infinitive, or literally, I'm sorry, aorist passive infinitive, into the to be credited also to them righteousness. So that righteousness might be credited to them is the more smooth English translation. Righteousness, again, dikaiosune, we have no new vocabulary here. Righteousness also, chi adjunctive, might be credited, the purpose, for the purpose of righteousness being credited to them. To be credited is logizomai, again, the aorist passive, to them, dative of advantage, autos, to those who are uncircumcised in the context. And he became the father of circumcision to those who are not only circumcised, but who indeed follow in the steps of the faith of our father Abraham, which he had while uncircumcised. And as Chi, you got pater again, the father of the circumcision, again, a genitive of relationship. Peritome, we might say the father of the Jews. The ones not from the source of circumcision only. And that is to those who are, they've translated this a phrase in the English, or in the Greek, as the English phrase, to those who are not only circumcised. To the ones not, literally. And it's important here because ek denotes source. Ek will be used with here, peritome, but he's going to begin to use ek a lot. You're going to be justified from the source of works, or based on works, or from the source of faith, or based on faith. Those are the only two ways to pursue justification, at least according to Paul, that those are the only two ways, and one of those doesn't work. So there's really only one way, and it's through faith. But here you have to the ones not being from the source of circumcision alone. Alone is the adverb monos, M-O-N-O-S. It means, it refers to that which is single or only, alone, a sole object. But who indeed follow in the steps of the faith of our father Abraham. But, strong adversative conjunction, Allah, who also, or indeed, as they've translated it here, is a chi adjunctive, who also follow. The ones following is the definite article plus the present active participle of stoicheo. S-T-O-I-C-H-E-O. Five times this is used literally to be in line, to agree with, spatially to follow behind. So following in the steps of someone is to emulate their actions, to emulate their lifestyle, to practice what they practice. That's what we mean by following in the steps of someone. To be their disciple, even, at a certain level. And although we're not disciples strictly of Abraham, but that's the idea. So here, to the ones who indeed follow in the footsteps, definite article plus ichnos, I-C-H-N-O-S. This term's only used three times. It means that, a footprint or a footstep. The footsteps of the faith. Here you have a genitive of production. The steps that are produced or characterized by faith. Abraham walked by faith, is what Paul is saying here. And that those who are going to emulate Abraham have to likewise walk by faith. That Abraham didn't just get salvation by faith, but when one considers his life, it was an exercise of walking in faith all the time. Now, doesn't mean he did it perfectly, or that he never doubted, or that he never failed or came up short. He did. But his general overall characteristic, we would say, what is the characteristic of Abraham? He lived by faith. He walked by faith. And so, you have the footsteps, i.e. the lifestyle that's produced by the faith of our father. Again, you got now here a subjective genitive. The faith that Abraham actually exercised, he's the one doing it. The faith comes from him. The faith of our father, Abraham. Our father is the genitive of us, genitive of relationship. Abraham, while he had, they've supplied all that, because all you have here, literally in the Greek, is in the sphere of akrobustia, in the sphere of uncircumcision. So he became the father of circumcision, i.e. the father of the Jews, not only to those who were circumcised, i.e. Jews, but who follow in the steps of our father Abraham, which he had while uncircumcised, technically while he was a Gentile, not while he was a Jew. And again, this seems to have eluded Jewish theologians that Abraham was a Gentile when he was called. And that he believed when he was a Gentile. And so therefore, for whatever reason, they don't seem to want to deal with that. Well, point one here, the syntax within this section has led to a number of suggestions as to the precise grammatical relationships between the various statements found in these two verses. Syntactically and grammatically, these verses are difficult. They're not readily, you can put them together. I think they can be understood, but it's not the easiest thing to do. You have these genitive strings. Whenever you have a genitive string, they're problematic. You got the steps of, the faith of, our father of us, Abraham. And you got a series of four or five genitives. Well, you got to deal with each one of those. Well, how do these genitives, number one, relate to one another? And how do they relate to the broader context within the sentence and the paragraph we're dealing with? Well, some want to construe the purpose clause in the middle of verse 11 so that he might be the father of all who believe without being circumcised with the end of verse 10. And essentially, they would just put in parenthesis the first part of verse 11 and just continue the sentence from verse 10, not while circumcised, but while uncircumcised, so that he might be the father of all who believe. Well, B, this view essentially makes the first part of verse 11 a parenthesis, with the sentence from verse 10 being continued with the purpose clause. However, point C, there is an independent clause in verse 11a, which mentions both Abraham's circumcision and the fact that he was righteous by faith. Well, both of these are also mentioned in verse 12. D, further, the phrase without being circumcised in the first purpose clause of verse 11 is clearly continued at the beginning of verse 12 with the phrase, and he might be the father of circumcision to those who are not only of the circumcision. So thus, the independent verb, he received, forms the basis for the purpose clause, so that he might be. So that when you see that verb there in verse 11a, it's not to be understood as a parenthesis. It is a main verb. He received the sign of circumcision. Why? For the purpose of making him the father of all who believe without being circumcised. This is why God does it this way. God has a purpose in all this. Now, one can argue for a result that this became the effective result. It did. We don't debate all that. But as a result of all of this, Abraham becomes this. But the question you have to ask is, what's more in the author's mind here? Is it the results of how Abraham turned out, or God's purpose in doing all this? And to me, the answer, it's all in God's purpose. It's more in God's purpose. Obviously, we see how it turned out. Well, F, another grammatical issue that will be addressed later is the matter of how one is to construe the second prepositional phrase that uses ice into with the articular infinitive of legizomai at the end of verse 11. You essentially have two purpose clauses. So that he might be the father of all who believe, and so that righteousness might be credited to them. Again, one has to ask the question, you know, is this what's in view here, purpose or result? We'll have to deal with that again. I still think it's purpose. I still think that this is God's overriding purpose in all of this in the life of Abraham, was to do so that people have this example, a perfect example of one who believed while uncircumcised, received the seal of circumcision, the sign of circumcision, and then was circumcised after he was a believer. And now, for the Jews, since they're circumcised all on the eighth day, they by definition have to be circumcised before they're believers. And again, if anyone is trusting in that as a means to salvation, it's the same today as with infant baptism. People say, well, I was baptized as a baby. That doesn't make you saved. You were also, you know, you may have been as a male, you might have been circumcised as a baby. It didn't make you saved. Nothing you did as a baby makes you saved. You have to exercise faith in Messiah. So, two here, the first part of verse 11, is designed to demonstrate that the relationship between the fact that Abraham was justified by faith and the fact of his subsequent circumcision. Three, if justification is attained through the matter of faith, and Abraham had justification by faith, one might certainly wonder about the purpose and importance of circumcision. If it truly doesn't have anything to do with salvation, why was it ever instituted? That's a good, legitimate theological question. If it's not germane really to the larger argument of justification by faith, what is its relationship to all of this? Why was it implemented even? Well, for from the perspective of spiritual reality, the ritual of circumcision was not necessary in terms of the imputation of righteousness. However, every Jew knew that circumcision was commanded, and so Paul addresses the real nature of the ritual. If it's commanded is one thing, okay, you have to do it. If it's a command, you're supposed to do it. But the question becomes, does doing this make you saved or add anything to your salvation? Does being circumcised give you a relationship with God? Answer is no. No, it doesn't. Just like baptism doesn't give you a relationship with God. It's a ritual. It's not designed to give you a relationship with God. It can't. It's not efficacious. If people believe that baptism symbolizes the washing away of your sins, well, it does a very poor job. Because you sin before you're baptized, you sin after you're baptized. Baptism's not the picture to wash away sins. That's not the purpose of that ritual at all. But again, the ritual of circumcision wasn't given to produce salvation, ever. It wasn't even a part of it. Well, five, Paul has made it quite clear that the imputation of righteousness came from the source of Abraham's faith, which he clearly exercised prior to the institution of the ritual of circumcision. Again, the chronology of Genesis makes this plain. That the ritual of circumcision wasn't instituted until he was 99. And depending upon when one thinks he believed, even if one makes that Genesis 15:6 his salvation, which is not correct, but even if one interprets it there, that occurs during a 10-year period that's well prior to him being 99 years old. He would have been between 75 and 85, let's just pick 80. So even if he was saved there, which he wasn't, he was saved back in Ur. Prior to leaving there. But even if he was saved there, he'd still been saved to 20 years before circumcision. In fact, it was even more, probably more like 40 years before he was circumcised. Salvation had occurred. Well, six, nevertheless, Paul states unequivocally that Abraham received circumcision as a sign. The Greek noun, semion, sign, refers to a distinguishing mark, whereby something is known or understood, a token, an indication, or a sign. And seven, a sign is a marker or pointer that serves as an aid to perception. In this case, the token of circumcision was given as a marker of the fact, that Abraham was already righteous by means of faith. This circumcision just said, all the circumcision was a sign saying, okay, you're righteous by means of faith. And so since all Jews are circumcised, what this sign was to teach them is that you need to be righteous by means of faith. But they didn't get that. Or they just distorted that over the years, and this became lost in their thinking. They focused on the physical ritual aspect and not on the spiritual reality behind it. That Abraham received this as a sign of the faith that he had, of the righteousness that he had. This points to the fact that Abraham is righteous. That's what this sign points to. When you see circumcision in the case of Abraham, what does this sign mean? It's a sign that Abraham is righteous. That's all it is. And for that matter, if you stop and think about it, it's an invisible sign. You don't walk around showing your circumcision. It's invisible. And that corresponds very well with the spiritual reality, which is invisible. You don't run around with your genitals out showing people, hey, I'm circumcised, I'm saved. That would be stupid. And so Abraham doesn't do that either. But the fact that you can't see it doesn't mean it's not there. Same thing's true with his righteousness by faith. Just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not true. Well, 8 here, the term is placed forward in the sentence. Since terms in the accusative normally follow the noun. And the verb, in fact. The emphasis is a sign he received. And it's emphasizing the sign nature of circumcision. That it's not reality, that it's a sign. That it's a ritual. But it's a sign that points to something. So we have that all the time in our society. You have various signs that point to things. Exit, a B Ridge exit, 1 mile ahead. Well, what's that a sign of? That's a sign that there's an off-ramp there, that you can get on it, and you can get to Bee Ridge Road, or Fruitville, or University, or whichever one you go off on. And so, those signs aren't the reality. That sign isn't Bee Ridge Road. It's just a sign that Bee Ridge Road actually exists and is coming up. Well, the sign of circumcision wasn't his salvation. It was a sign he was saved. It pointed to the fact that he already had this pre-existing relationship with God. Grammatically, the noun peritome, circumcision, is in apposition to the noun semion. This means that the genitive noun circumcision essentially clarifies or defines what the sign is. The sign was circumcision. And so in this case, in a genitive of apposition, the two are roughly equivalent. The sign equals circumcision. Circumcision is the sign. 10, Paul continues to define the ritual of circumcision with the next term, sphragus, which means a seal, which is in apposition to the first noun, semion. That noun, seal, first denoted the instrument used for sealing, stamping, or imprinting something. A seal or a signet, and often a ruler would have a signet, often on a ring, but it could be another stamp that he had with him. Essentially equivalent to, like, today we might call a notary stamp. A notary has these little, you know, he has a stamp, if they have them, they have the little metal thing that'll imprint the paper, and it forms a seal. And that's what we're talking about with a seal. In this case, generally speaking, of course, it more belonged to royalty and all that. But other people used them too. Other people use seals to document things and all of that, and to validate it. So the noun seal first denoted the instrument used for sealing, stamping, or imprinting something. A seal or a signet. 11, it was then used of the impression made in clay or other soft material by the signet. So it came to be used figuratively to mean to confirm, to authenticate, to certify, or attest to the truth or accuracy of something. When somebody puts their seal on something, they're saying that, okay, I validated that this is correct. My seal says I found this to be all in order. And that's why, like, for instance, a notary seal, that's why a notary can only seal something, a seal or notarize a signature, the person has to be present. He has to physically see them do it. And so what that seal means is that person was here and they signed this of their own free will. That's what that notary seal means on a document. Well, what does the seal of circumcision mean? Well, it's a seal of his faith. It means he already had it. It points to it. Like the sign, it's an aid to perception. It validates it, is the idea behind it. So, 12, when it comes to the matter of salvation, it becomes very clear that the ritual of circumcision had no real value. It is a ritual after all. Rituals are not efficacious. They never accomplish anything. All the rituals where they had all the slaughters of all the animals, all the millions of animals that were sacrificed over the course of the age of Israel, and even before that, and when the home priesthood, they were still sacrificing animals as a part of their worship. All those animals that died and shed their blood that was designed to point, that were rituals to point to the coming of Christ. Not one drop of animal blood ever provided forgiveness of anything. You can slaughter millions and millions and millions of animals. It won't take away sins. You have to have a reality. Those are just rituals. Rituals point to the greater thing. And here the ritual of circumcision, the sign of circumcision, points to the greater matter that Abraham was already a believer. And that these things are proof of that. And attest to that fact. And then, obviously, if you're a Jew, the purpose of all that would be to tell you, well, you need to follow in the steps of Abraham. You need to emulate him. But how did Abraham become righteous? The Bible says it was through faith. Jewish history says it was because he kept the law. Well, which is it? It's the Bible version. He became righteous through faith. So again, anything that's a ritual has no real value in terms of being efficacious. It doesn't, quote, accomplish anything. The best thing you can do with a ritual, say the Lord's table or water baptism, the best you can do is comply with it. But it doesn't make you more or less saved. Again, if you don't take the Lord's table ever, you could still be a believer. But you're commanded, you have a command to do these things. So the command should be taken seriously, of course, and obeyed at some point. So again, here it is a ritual, and it does not make one a child of God apart from the real matter of justification by faith. Thus, circumcision not only acted as a sign, which pointed to the greater reality that Abraham was righteous by means of his faith, circumcision simply confirmed or authenticated his righteous status. Leanhart suggests that the sign is the means of God of indicating what God communicates to those in the world, while the seal is God's attestation to the individual that his faith has been credited for righteousness. There may be some truth to that. That's why I included his comment here. They are different in their character. A sign and a seal are not exactly the same thing. They're not designed to be. One authenticates and one points to something else. But obviously both of them relate to something else. The sign and the seal of themselves are always designed to point to something greater. Again, just as if a notary seals a document with his stamp, he's attesting to the reality that whoever signs it, it could be multiple people, were there, they did it of their own volition, and he saw them sign it. So that stamp just says this document has been legally attested as being correct and valid and true. So 15, the sign and seal of circumcision all came after the fact of Abraham's justification. His faith and subsequent righteousness all occurred during the time when Abraham was uncircumcised. So 16, the use of the singular definite article, translated as which, is understood by some to refer to his faith. And that is a seal of the righteousness of the faith which he had while uncircumcised. I'm just looking here. Righteousness of the faith. I don't know if I mentioned it in the exegesis, but you've got a genitive feminine singular of the definite article. Where he says a seal of the righteousness of the faith which he had in the sphere or state of uncircumcision. Well, the use of the definite article, singular, is understood by some to refer to his faith, since it is in immediate proximity to the noun pistis. Both of those, by the way, are feminine, so grammatically that works. But, however, the word righteousness is also feminine. And the definite article here could be referring back to his righteousness, not just to his faith. Faith is the immediate antecedent. But faith is in a genitive string there that you have to kind of account for. So which would his emphasis be on? The faith he had or the righteousness he had? Well, both of them, but I think it more likely here refers to the entire phrase, the righteousness of faith, since that is the primary issue in this entire section. And so I would take the definite article here in this first part of this, a seal of the righteousness of faith, which righteousness by faith he had, that this occurred, while he was uncircumcised. So 17, whether one sees the article as referring to his faith or to his righteous status is somewhat unimportant, since the two concepts are inseparably united. Whichever one you want to focus on, I think it focuses on sort of the entire phrase. But one could make a grammatical argument for either one, for faith or righteousness. Well, 18, in the middle of verse 11, Paul moves on to describe the purpose for which God made Abraham the spiritual father of all believers. 19, the term father is used in a number of ways in the Bible, including the following. A, one's biological father, his immediate male ancestor. Genesis 2:24. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother. In this context, it refers to immediate male ancestor. Father and mother, immediate, you know, parents. Also, same way in 22:7. It's also used of one's ancestors, whether immediate or remote. For instance, Genesis 28:13. And behold, the Lord stood above it, this Jacob's ladder that he saw. And he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. And the land on which you lie, I will give it to you and your descendants. Well, the God of your father Abraham, that's his grandfather technically. It's not his father. So it can refer to a more remote ancestor. Sometimes a father, great-grandfather, etc. See, it is used figuratively to denote a spiritual ancestor, one who has passed his qualities on to others. The qualities can be good, for instance, in Romans 4:11, where we have our verse, so that he might be the father of all who believe, or in John 8:44, it's used in a very bad sense. You are of your father, the devil. Oops. Well, what he's telling them is that their actual spiritual ancestor is the devil. That they are unbelievers. They are in the spiritual realm of darkness. Their father is a liar, and they're liars, and they're murderers because their father's a murderer. One of the things you see in this whole concept of father or ancestor is that the qualities of the ancestor are seen, when it's used this way, in the, quote, children, in the descendants. So he says here, your father is the devil. This outlaws right here, just this statement by itself, outlaws the entire idea of the, quote, universal fatherhood of God. That everybody in the human race, we all God's children. No, we not. We are not all God's children. Some of us are, and most of us ain't. And the reality is, those who ain't, they're the devil's children. And they're going to emulate their father. This is why, as believers, what is our job? To live up, imitate God, be imitators of me as I also am of Christ. Imitate God, we're told multiple times. And it isn't just a matter of, quote, strict rote imitation. As we know, the dynamic of the Christian life is Bible doctrine within the believer, providing the dynamic to live the life, the understanding of how to live, and what God actually wants. And that isn't just, quote, learning about God, memorizing it, and then imitating what you've seen. Although we are to, we're told in certain places, imitate the Lord. Follow after the Lord. Follow. He left us an example for us to follow. Well, yes, then you're supposed to imitate his example. Well, here in this case, you're of your father the devil. Your father is no good. Your father is a scumbag, and you're a scumbag. And that's essentially what Jesus tells him. That this is why you want to kill me. This is why you don't like the truth, because you like lies. And you like murder. And you're really hateful, worthless people. But that doesn't, you know, that's how one way to evangelize, I guess. But that's the truth. And so he spells it out to him. So there it's used in a bad sense, of course, who has passed his qualities on to his children. Well, 20, God's purpose was to establish Abraham not only as a model of justification by faith, and in fact, the model of justification by faith, but as the example and spiritual ancestor for everyone that would make the salvation adjustment through faith. 21, since Abraham believed while he was uncircumcised, he is viewed as the spiritual head of all those that believe while being uncircumcised. In that sense, if you're a believer, Abraham, you have a spiritual connection now with Abraham. It doesn't mean, on the other hand, that you become a covenant theologian and start willy-nilly applying Old Testament principles that are written to the Jews to me because now I'm a spiritual Jew. Well, no, we've got things to deal with all of that. You're just grafted into the tree. You're like a branch. And that analogy is going to be used later on in Romans 9, I believe, and in 10. That we're like branches grafted into this tree. And if we're not careful, obviously, if we don't continue to walk by faith and do the things of God's plan, well, he said, I can snap you off. And I can plug the Jews right back in there. That's what he warns the Gentiles. Why there's no room for arrogance on the Gentile believers' part. So we have established now, through the Lord, part of his plan was to make Abraham the spiritual ancestor of everyone who would believe, that who emulate Abraham. So in verse 12, Paul goes on to document the fact that God's purpose in giving the sign of circumcision was to establish Abraham as the father of all who are circumcised. So obviously, in this one, I think it becomes pretty clear, you should see that Abraham is designed to be the spiritual father of everyone in a universal sense, whether they're circumcised or whether they're not. That doesn't matter, it doesn't enter into that. Well, 22, there is little doubt that the Jews viewed Abraham as the father of the Jewish nation. Now that we know, I mean, they were big time on this. This goes without saying somewhat. They generally believed that if one was to experience salvation, he either had to be born a Jew or become a part of the nation of Israel. And 23, given the primacy of the Jews, particularly in their own thinking, it is somewhat shocking that Paul asserts the fatherhood of Abraham over Gentiles in verse 11, before he asserts his fatherhood over Jews in verse 12. However, point 24, it is clear from the historical evidence that Abraham was in the condition of the Gentiles, i.e. uncircumcised, when he received his justification by faith. So, to me, it makes, you know, while the Jews might take offense at it, that he leads off with Gentiles first, the fact is Abraham was a Gentile first. He became a, quote, Jew later on. And that does not constitute, by the way, the beginning of the Jewish nation. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were not, they were the forefathers of the Jewish nation, but they didn't exist as a nation at all. The nation doesn't come into existence until it receives its land and is planted in Canaan. Then the Jews effectively become a nation. But they're not a nation prior to that. That's one of those things where it says, I saw your fathers, referring to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, as the earliest fruit on the fig tree. Well, fig tree can't mean nation of Israel in that context because there was no nation of Israel when he saw Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They were the forerunners of the nation. They were not the fruit of it. And so that can't mean national Israel in that context in the Old Testament. That's one of the verses that's been used to document that. Well, it doesn't work. Because there is no national Israel until they get to Canaan. Then they're deemed to be a nation. Then and only then, in fact. And then there's a change of priesthood, and that's when the dispensation changes. The dispensation doesn't change with Abraham. Family priesthood was still the norm through the time of Moses, and when the Levitical priesthood's established. For there to be a change in dispensation, there has to be a change in priesthood. That's one of the things that must accompany a dispensation. The new dispensation for the Jews begins at essentially Sinai and then the taking of the Canaan as they receive a new priesthood, the Levitical priesthood, in fact. So again, it's not to me surprising that he leads this off with Abraham being uncircumcised, because that's where he started in all of this. 25, the purpose clause will be continued in verse 12. But is interrupted here by another clause that has been identified by some as denoting purpose and by others as denoting result. 26, the construction is identical to the first purpose clause in verse 11, which is a strong indication that purpose is in view and not result. Further, Paul has used this construction previously, and purpose was clearly in view. When you look, say, in Romans 1:11, you have that construction with ice and the articular infinitive. For a long time, he says, I wanted to come to see you, so that I might impart some spiritual gift to you. Then you have his purpose clause, eisto with the infinitive, which is what you have here in Romans 4, for the purpose or to the end that you would be established. And clearly that is Paul's overriding purpose in wanting to come there, is to help establish them and grow them spiritually. So in 1:11 there, that you may be established at the end, that is his purpose. And that's the very same construction we've got here in Romans 4. So I don't see any reason to read it as anything other than purpose. Thus, it seems it was God's intention to justify men by means of faith and grace. And that purpose is clearly seen in the example of Abraham, who is the paradigm. Now, that means a pattern or model of how something should be done of all those who believe. And 28, the purpose clause that was began in the middle of verse 11 was interrupted by the second purpose clause at the end of that verse, is now continued at the beginning of verse 12, which extends the fatherhood of Abraham to those that are circumcised. And so when you read here in verse 11, and he received the sign of circumcision so that he might be the father of all who believe without being circumcised. Then there's another purpose clause there, but then the sentence now continues, and he might be the father of circumcision to those who are not only of the circumcision. So Abraham is again designed to be the universal father of everybody. This is God's purpose for his life. So again, that purpose clause that's interrupted in verse 12 with another purpose clause there in verse 11 is now continued in verse 12, which extends the father of Abraham to those that are circumcised. And 29, the fact that Abraham had received the sign and seal of circumcision had the purpose of qualifying him to be the spiritual father of those that were circumcised as Abraham was. And 30, although there is some division among commentators about the number of groups in view in verse 12, there are good reasons for limiting it, what is said, only to the Jews. But because, and this is one of the things that they, one reason again for the debate here, point 31, is the grammatical difficulty that is presented by the presence of the terms a la kai. But also, or but even, or even indeed, which might suggest that it is not only those that are circumcised, but those in another group as well. See, one could make the argument, and the New American Standard kind of got around it by not translating the chi here ostensibly. They translated it, well, sort of ostensibly with indeed, but normally it would be but also. And it would normally signify an addition. So the ones who are circumcised, that would be Jews. But also those who follow in the steps. So are those people who are not circumcised? No, they're still people who are circumcised. They just follow in the steps of Abraham. They actually got the correct understanding of this. And they follow his steps of faith. Well, so again, one reason for the grammatical difficulty is the terms a la kai, which might suggest that it is not only those that are circumcised, but those in another group as well. In 32, however, Paul has sufficiently dealt with the Gentiles and their relationship to the fatherhood of Abraham in verse 11. Therefore, what would be the purpose of reintroducing the Gentiles at this point? There wouldn't be one. He's already acknowledged that Abraham's the spiritual father, the spiritual ancestor of everyone who believes. So 34, however, it is not those that are circumcised that are the spiritual sons of Abraham. They are the physical sons of Abraham, but they're not the spiritual sons necessarily, but rather those that emulate Abraham in the matter of his faith. 35, the Greek verb stoikeo. I didn't tell you what that means, but that's actually the word there to follow, to be in line with, to be behind. So follow is the word you would put there. It is found here as an articular participle, which functions as a substantive that denotes the habitual action of the group in view. 36 here, the verb is used five times and originally meant to be in a line, to stand in ranks. It is only used in a figurative sense in the New Testament to convey the idea of being in line with a person or object that was considered as a standard for one's conduct. And 37, it means to be in harmony or agreement with someone, to align yourself with someone else, to hold their views and live in conformity with them. So 38, therefore, while all of Abraham's physical descendants may be circumcised and may enjoy a racial relationship with the patriarch, they do. They are genetically related to him. Only those Jews that demonstrate the same type of faith as Abraham are considered to be his spiritual children. And that's really the big emphasis here, is on the spiritual children of God as evidenced and seen through Abraham. That Abraham himself was a child of God. But he serves as a standard, an example, a paradigm of everybody who's going to believe and do it right. 39, thus, the construction here actually limits the larger group of circumcised Jews to the considerably smaller group of those Jews that also walk by faith. And I see that there's only one group in view in verse 12. And that is, he's the father of circumcision, not to those that are just physically circumcised, but those who follow in his steps. That limits the portion of the circumcision he's talking about. And so it still refers to the Jews at large, not Gentiles. He's not reintroducing Gentiles into this. He's already said that Abraham's the father of them. But here he's dealing with the Jews. And what he's saying is Abraham's really only the father of Jews that live by faith, of Jews that experience justification by faith. He's really only their father in the true spiritual sense that way. He means genetically they're related to him. But he just sees that as, again, that's a genetic descent, but not the real descent that matters, which is the spiritual descent. So 40, Abraham's footsteps of faith began with the matter of salvation, phase one, which must be considered as the first spiritual step. He continued to walk in faith, advancing to maturity and beyond. This is one of the things that when you consider the nature of Abraham's faith, one of the things you see is that it's an ongoing faith. Abraham didn't get to a point and say, I quit. No more faith. I give up. I'm tired of all this. I haven't seen you've promised me this land. I don't own one plot of land here. You know, Abraham could have got fed up. You said I was going to have an heir. Here I am now 99 years old. How's this going to work? Abraham could have got very frustrated with God. We never do, but Abraham could have. But when you find yourself getting frustrated with God, it's a manifestation of a lack of faith. That we've tossed our faith and we're looking at everything else, rather than just concentrating on what we should be. Well, Hebrews 11, 8 through 10, by faith, Abraham, when he was called, obeyed, going out to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. Now, that's really walking by faith, literally. You don't know where you're going. Well, you just keep putting one foot in front of the other, Abraham, and I'll tell you when you're there. And that's what he had to do. By faith, he lived as an alien in the land of promise. This is supposed to be his land, but he lives there as a stranger. He's not viewed as the owner of this land, that it belongs to him. He's not viewed in that way at all during his earthly life ever. In fact, the one little piece of land that he finally owns is just a burial plot. That's all he owned in all of Canaan. A burial plot for Sarah. That's what he finally bought from, the sons of Heth. And so that was it. So he lives by faith, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise. For he was looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. See, he's looking for a much more permanent situation. He knows that this earthly life is temporal, which is what we better know. That it's temporal and that it's passing. Okay, well, I thought we were going to get through this. We're going to have to just pick up here. We've only got a few more points, but our time is gone. So we will wrap this up and continue on here with verse 13 on Tuesday. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for this time together. May God, the Holy Spirit, sanctify this information to our souls. In Christ's name, amen.